and I want to know what that feels like." He opened his mouth, but stopped as he beheld her smile. Though she had no regrets about her choice, she felt something strangely like disappointment when he said,
"As you wish."
"But I'd like to remain your friend." He put his hands in his pockets.
"Always."
She thought about touching his arm or about kissing his cheek, but "free" kept echoing through her again and again and again, and she couldn't stop smiling. He rolled his neck, and his smile was a bit strained.
"I think Nehemia is on her way here to tell you about the contract. She'll be mad at me for telling you first. Apologize for me, will you?"
He paused when he opened the door, his hand still upon the knob.
"Congratulations, Selena,"
he said quietly. Before she could reply, he shut the door and left. Alone, Selena looked to the window and put a hand on her heart, whispering the word to herself again and again. Free. Chapter 54. Several hours later, Kaol stared at the door to her dining room. He didn't entirely know what he was doing back here, but he'd looked for Dorian in his rooms, and he hadn't been there, and he needed to tell him that things weren't as they'd seemed when he walked in on them earlier. He glanced at his hands. The king had barely said anything to him over the past week, and Kane's name hadn't been mentioned in any of their meetings. Not that it would be, as Kane was little more than a pawn in a game to amuse the king, and certainly not a member of the royal guard. But he was still dead. Kane's eyes would open no more because of him. He would not draw breath because of him. His heart had stopped beating because of him. Kaol's hand drifted to where his sword should have been. He'd thrown it in the corner of his room as soon as he'd returned from the duel last week. Mercifully, someone had cleaned the blood from it. Perhaps the guards who had taken Kaol to his chambers and given him a strong drink. They'd sat in silence until some semblance of reality returned, and then left without a word, not waiting for Kaol to thank them. Kaol ran a hand through his short hair and opened the dining room door. Selena was picking at her dinner, slouched in her seat. Her brows rose. "Two visits in one day," she said, setting down her fork. "To what do I owe this pleasure?"
He frowned. "Where's Dorian?"
"Why would Dorian be here?"
"I thought he usually came here at this hour."
"Well, don't expect to find him here after today." He approached, stopping at the edge of the table.
"Why?"
She popped a piece of bread into her mouth. "Because I ended it."
"You did what?"
"I'm the king's champion. Surely you realize how inappropriate it would be for me to have a relationship with a prince." Her blue eyes glittered, and he wondered at the slight emphasis she put on prince, and why it made his heart skip a beat. Kaol fought his own smile.
"I was wondering when you'd come to your senses."
Did she fret as he did? Did she constantly think about her blood-covered hands? But for all of her swaggering, for all of her gloating and parading about with hands on her hips, there was still something soft in her face. It gave him hope. Hope that he had not lost his soul in the act of killing. Hope that humanity could still be found, and honor could be regained. She had come out of Endovier and could still laugh. She twirled her hair around a finger. She was still wearing that absurdly short nightgown, which slid up her thighs as she propped her feet on the edge of the table. He focused on her face.
"Would you like to join me?" she asked, gesturing with one hand to the table. "It's a shame for me to celebrate alone."
He looked at her, at that half-grin on her face. Whatever had happened with Kane, whatever had happened at the duel, that would haunt him. But right now... He pulled out the chair in front of him and sat down. She filled a goblet with wine and handed it to him. "To 4 years until freedom," she said, lifting her glass. He raised his in salute.
"To you, Selena."
Their eyes met, and Kaol didn't hide his smile as she grinned at him. Perhaps 4 years with her might not be enough. Selena stood in the tomb and knew she was dreaming. She often visited the tomb in her dreams, to slay the Ritterrack again, to be trapped inside Elena's sarcophagus, to face a featureless young woman with golden hair and a crown far too heavy for her to bear. But tonight, Tonight it was just her and Elena, and the tomb was filled with moonlight, not a sign to be seen of the Ritterak's corpse.
"How are you recovering?" the queen asked, leaning against the side of her own sarcophagus.
Selena stayed in the doorway. The queen's armor was gone, replaced by her usual flowing gown. None of the fierceness twisted her features, either.
"Fine," Selena said, but glanced down at herself. In this dream world, her injuries were gone.
"I didn't know you were a warrior," she said, jerking her chin toward the stand where Damaris stood.
"There are many things history has forgotten about me."
Elena's blue eyes glowed with sorrow and anger.
"I fought on the battlefields during the demon wars against Erewhon," at Gavin's side. "That's how we fell in love.
But your legends portray me as a damsel who waited in a tower with a magic necklace that would help the heroic prince." Selena touched the amulet.
"I'm sorry."
"You could be different," Elena said quietly. "You could be great. Greater than me, than any of us." Selena opened her mouth, but no words came out. Elena took a step toward her.
"You could rattle the stars," she whispered. "You could do anything, if you only dared. And deep down you know it, too. That's what scares you most."
She walked to Selena, and it was all the assassin could do to keep from backing out of the tomb and running away. The queen's blazing, glacier-blue eyes were as ethereal as her lovely face.
"You found and defeated the evil Cain was bringing into the world. And now you're the king's champion. You did as I asked."
"I did it for my freedom," Selena said. Elena gave her a knowing smile that made her want to scream, but Selena kept her face blank.
"So you say. But when you called for help, when the amulet snapped and you let your need be felt, you knew someone would answer. You knew I would answer."
"Why?" Selena dared ask. "Why answer? Why do I need to be the king's champion?" Elena lifted her face toward the moonlight streaming into the tomb.
"Because there are people who need you to save them as much as you yourself need to be saved," she said.
"Deny it all you want, but there are people, your friends, who need you here. Your friend Nehemia needs you here.
Because I was sleeping, a long, endless sleep, and I was awoken by a voice. And the voice didn't belong to one person, but to many. Some whispering, some screaming, some not even aware that they were crying out. But they all want the same thing."
She touched the center of Selena's forehead. Heat flared, and a blue light flashed across Elena's face as Selena's mark burned and then faded.
"And when you are ready, when you start to hear them crying out as well, then you will know why I came to you, and why I have stood by you, and will continue to watch over you, no matter how many times you shove me away."
Selena's eyes stung, and she took a step back toward the hall. Elena smiled sadly.
"Until that day comes, you're exactly where you need to be.
From the king's side, you'll be able to see what needs to be done.
But for now, enjoy the accomplishment."
Selena felt ill at the thought of what else might be asked of her, but she nodded.
"Fine,"
she breathed, making to leave, but paused in the hall. She looked over her shoulder to where the queen still stood, watching her with those sad eyes.
"Thank you for saving my life."
Elena bowed her head.
"Blood ties can't be broken,"
she whispered, and then vanished, her words echoing in the silent tomb. Chapter 55. The following day, Selena approached the glass throne, casting a wary glance about the council chamber. It was the same one in which she'd seen the king those many months ago. A greenish fire burned in the mouth-like fireplace, and 13 men sat at a long table, each staring at her. But there were no other champions left. Only her. The victor. Dorian stood beside his father and smiled at her.
"Hopefully that's a good sign."
Despite the hope his grin provided, she couldn't ignore the terror that welled in her heart as the king, with dark eyes, watched her walk forward. The gold skirts of her dress were the only sound in the chamber. Selena kept her hands pressed against the maroon bodice, trying not to wring them. She stopped, and bowed. Kaol, standing beside her, did the same. The captain stood closer to her than he needed to.
"You have come to sign your contract," the king said, and his voice made her bones splinter.
"How can such a beastly man possess this sort of power over the world?"
"Yes, Your Majesty," she said as submissively as possible, staring at the man's boots.
"Be my champion, and you'll find yourself a free woman. 4 years of service was the bargain you set with my son, though I cannot imagine why he felt the need to bargain with you,"
he said with a deadly glare in Dorian's direction. Dorian bit his lip, but said nothing. Her heart dropped and rose inside of her like a buoy. She would do whatever the king asked, every foul mission he could throw at her, and then when the 4 years were over, she'd be free to live her own life, without fear of pursuit or enslavement. She could begin again, far away from Otterlin. She could go away and forget this awful kingdom. She didn't know whether to smile, or to laugh, or to nod, or to cry and dance about. She could live off of her fortune until old age. She wouldn't have to kill. She could say goodbye to Aerobin and leave Otterlin forever.
"Aren't you going to thank me?" the king barked.
She dropped into a low bow, barely able to contain her joy. She had defeated him. She had sinned against his empire and now would emerge victorious.
"Thank you for such an honor and gift, Your Majesty. I am your humble servant."
The king snorted.
"Lying won't help you. Bring the contract forward."
A councilman dutifully placed a piece of parchment on the table before her. She stared at the quill and the blank line where her name was to go. The king's eyes flashed, but she didn't bite. Just one sign of rebellion, one movement of aggression, and he'd hang her.
"There will be no questioning on your part. When I tell you to do something, you will do it. I don't need to explain myself to you. And if you somehow are caught, you will deny any connection to me to your last breath. Is that clear?"
"Perfectly, Your Majesty."
He strode from the dais. Dorian started to move, but Kaol shook his head. Selena looked at the floor as the king stopped before her.
"Now understand this, assassin," the king said. She felt small and frail, so close to him. "Should you fail any of my tasks, should you forget to return, you will pay dearly."
The king's voice became so soft that even she could barely hear it.
"If you don't return from the missions on which I send you, I'll have your friend, the captain."
He paused for emphasis.
"Killed."
Her eyes were wide as she stared at his empty throne.
"If you fail to return after that, I'll have Nehemia killed. Then I'll have her brothers executed. Not long after that, I'll bury their mother beside them. Don't believe I'm not as cunning and stealthy as you are."
She could feel him smile.
"You get the picture, don't you?"
He pulled away.
"Sign it."
She looked at the blank space and what it offered. She took a silent, long breath, and with a prayer for her soul, she signed. Each letter was harder to form than the last. Finally, she let the quill drop onto the table.
"Good. Now get out," the king said, pointing at the door. "I'll summon you when you're needed."
The king sat on his throne again. Selena bowed carefully, not taking her stare from his face. Only for an instant did she glance at Dorian, whose sapphire eyes gleamed with what she could have sworn was sadness before he smiled at her. She felt Kaol's hand graze her arm. Kaol would die. She couldn't send him to his death, or the Yitgar family. With feet both heavy and light, she left the chamber. Outside, the wind bellowed and raged against the glass spire, but it could do nothing to shatter the walls. With each step away from the chamber, the weight on her shoulders lifted. Kaol remained silent until they entered the stone castle, when he turned to her.
"Well, champion," he said.
He still wasn't wearing his sword.
"Yes, captain."
The corners of his mouth tugged upward.
"Are you happy now?"
She didn't fight her own grin. "I may have just signed away my soul, but
yes,
or as happy as I can be."
"Selena Sardothian, the king's champion," he mused.
What about it?
I like the sound of it, he said, shrugging. Do you want to know what your first mission will be?
She looked at his golden brown eyes and all of the promises that lay within them, and linked her arm with his as she smiled. Tell me tomorrow.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Crown of Midnight, Book 2 in the Throne of Glass series, free. This has been an Audible Inc. production of Throne of Glass, written by Sarah J. Moss, narrated by Elizabeth Evans, producer Mike Charzik, copyright 2012 by Sarah J. Moss, production copyright 2013 by Audible Inc. And now, a free preview of Crown of Midnight, Book 2 in the Throne of Glass series. Part 1. The King's Champion. Chapter 1. The shutters swinging in the storm winds were the only sign of her entry. No one had noticed her scaling the garden wall of the darkened manor house, and with the thunder and the gusting wind off the nearby sea, no one heard her as she shimmied up the drainpipe, swung onto the windowsill, and slithered into the second-floor hallway. The King's Champion pressed herself into an alcove at the thud of approaching steps. Concealed beneath a black mask and hood, she willed herself to melt into the shadows, to become nothing more than a slip of darkness. A servant girl trudged past to the open window, grumbling as she latched it shut. Seconds later, she disappeared down the stairwell at the other end of the hall. The girl hadn't noticed the wet footprints on the floorboards. Lightning flashed, illuminating the hallway. The assassin took a long breath, going over the plans she'd painstakingly memorized in the 3 days she'd been watching the manor house on the outskirts of Bellhaven. 5 doors on each side. Lord Nerall's bedroom was the third on the left. She listened for the approach of any other servants, but the house remained hushed as the storm raged around them. Silent and smooth as a wraith, she moved down the hall. Lord Nerall's bedroom door swung open with a slight groan. She waited until the next rumble of thunder before easing the door shut behind her. Another flash of lightning illuminated 2 figures sleeping in the 4-poster bed. Lord Nerall was no older than 35, and his wife, dark-haired and beautiful, slept soundly in his arms. What had they done to offend the king so gravely that he wanted them dead? She crept to the edge of the bed. It wasn't her place to ask questions. Her job was to obey. Her freedom depended on it. With each step toward Lord Nerall, she ran through the plan again. Her sword slid out of its sheath with barely a whine. She took a shuddering breath, bracing herself for what would come next. Lord Nerall's eyes flew open, just as the King's Champion raised her sword over his head. Chapter 2. Selena Sardothian stalked down the halls of the glass castle of Rifthold. The heavy sack clenched in her hand swung with each step, banging every so often into her knees. Despite the hooded black cloak that concealed much of her face, the guards didn't stop her as she strode toward the King of Otterland's council chamber. They knew very well who she was, and what she did for the king. As the king's champion, she outranked them. Actually, there were few in the castle she didn't outrank now, and fewer still who didn't fear her. She approached the open glass doors, her cloak sweeping behind her. The guards posted on either side straightened as she gave them a nod before entering the council chamber. Her black boots were nearly silent against the red marble floor. On the glass throne in the center of the room sat the King of Otterland, his dark gaze locked on the sack dangling from her fingers. Just as she had the last 3 times, Selena dropped to 1 knee before his throne and bowed her head. Dorian Havilliard stood beside his father's throne, and she could feel his sapphire eyes fixed on her. At the foot of the dais, always between her and the royal family, stood Kaol Westfall, captain of the guard. She looked up at him from the shadows of her hood, taking in the lines of his face. For all the expression he showed, she might as well have been a stranger. But that was expected, and it was just part of the game they'd become so skilled at playing these past few months. Kaol might be her friend, might be someone she'd somehow come to trust, but he was still captain, still responsible for the royal lives in this room above all others. The king spoke.
"Rise."
Selena kept her chin high as she stood and pulled off her hood. The king waved a hand at her, the obsidian ring on his finger gleaming in the afternoon light.
"Is it done?"
Selena reached a gloved hand into the sack and tossed the severed head toward him. No one spoke as it bounced, a vulgar thudding of stiff and rotting flesh on marble. It rolled to a stop at the foot of the dais. Milky eyes turned toward the ornate glass chandelier overhead. Dorian straightened, glancing away from the head. Kaol just stared at her. "He put up a fight," Selena said. The king leaned forward, examining the mauled face and the jagged cuts in the neck.
"I can barely recognize him."
Selena gave him a crooked smile, though her throat tightened. "I'm afraid severed heads don't travel well." She fished in her sack again, pulling out a hand. "Here's his seal ring." She tried not to focus too much on the decaying flesh she held, the reek that had worsened with each passing day. She extended the hand to Kaol, whose bronze eyes were distant as he took it from her and offered it to the king. The king's lip curled, but he pried the ring off the stiff finger. He tossed the hand at her feet as he examined the ring. Beside his father, Dorian shifted. When she'd been dueling in the competition, he hadn't seemed to mind her history. What did he expect would happen when she became the king's champion? Though she supposed severed limbs and heads would turn the stomachs of most people, even after living for a decade under Otterlin's rule. And Dorian, who had never seen battle, never witnessed the chained lines shuffling their way to the butchering blocks. Perhaps she should be impressed he hadn't vomited yet.
"What of his wife?"
the king demanded, turning the ring over in his fingers again and again. "Changed to what's left of her husband at the bottom of the sea," Selena replied with a wicked grin, and removed the slender, pale hand from her sack. It bore a golden wedding band, engraved with the date of the marriage. She offered it to the king, but he shook his head. She didn't dare look at Dorian or Kaol as she put the woman's hand back in the thick canvas sack.
"Very well, then," the king murmured.
She remained still as his eyes roved over her, the sack, the head. After a too long moment, he spoke again.
"There is a growing rebel movement here in Rifthold. A group of individuals who are willing to do anything to get me off the throne, and who are attempting to interfere with my plans. Your next assignment is to root out and dispatch them all before they become a true threat to my empire."
Selena clenched the sack so tightly her fingers ached. Kaol and Dorian were staring at the king now, as if this were the first they were hearing of this too. She'd heard whispers of rebel forces before she'd gone to Endovir. She'd met fallen rebels in the salt mines, but to have an actual movement growing in the heart of the capital, to have her be the one to dispatch them one by one. And plans? What plans? What did the rebels know of the king's maneuverings? She shoved the questions down, down, down until there was no possibility of reading them on her face. The king drummed his fingers on the arm of the throne, still playing with Nerall's ring in his other hand.
"There are several people on my list of suspected traitors, but I will only give you one name at a time. This castle is crawling with spies."
Kaol stiffened at that, but the king waved his hand and the captain approached her, his face still blank as he extended a piece of paper to Selena. She avoided the urge to stare at Kaol's face as he gave her the letter, though his gloved fingers grazed hers before he let go. Keeping her fingers neutral, she looked at the paper. On it was a single name, Archer Finn. It took every ounce of will and sense of self-preservation to keep her shock from showing. She knew Archer, had known him since she was 13 and he'd come for lessons at the Assassin's Keep. He'd been several years older, already a highly sought-after courtesan, who was in need of some training on how to protect himself from his rather jealous clients and their husbands. He'd never minded her ridiculous girlhood crush on him. In fact, he'd let her test out flirting with him, and had usually turned her into a complete giggling mess. Of course, she hadn't seen him for several years, since before she went to Endovir,
but she'd never thought him capable of something like this. He'd been handsome and kind and jovial, not a traitor to the crown so dangerous that the king would want him dead. It was absurd. Whoever was giving the king his information was a damned idiot.
Just him or all his clients, too? Selena blurted.
The king gave her a slow smile. You know, Archer? I'm not surprised.
A taunt. A challenge. She just stared ahead, willing herself to calm, to breathe. I used to. He's an extraordinarily well-guarded man. I'll need time to get past his defenses.
So carefully said, so casually phrased. What she really needed time for was to figure out how Archer had gotten tangled up in this mess, and whether the king was telling the truth. If Archer truly were a traitor and a rebel, well, she'd figure that out later.
Then you have 1 month, the king said, and if he's not buried by then, perhaps I shall reconsider your position, girl.
She nodded, submissive, yielding, gracious. Thank you, Your Majesty.
When you have dispatched Archer, I will give you the next name on the list.
She had avoided the politics of the kingdoms, especially their rebel forces, for so many years, and now she was in the thick of it.
Wonderful.
Be quick, the king warned. Be discreet. Your payment for Nerall is already in your chambers.
Selena nodded again and shoved the piece of paper into her pocket. The king was staring at her.
Selena looked away, but forced a corner of her mouth to twitch upward, to make her eyes glitter with the thrill of the hunt. At last, the king lifted his gaze to the ceiling.
Take that head and be gone.
He pocketed Nerall's seal ring, and Selena swallowed her twinge of disgust. A trophy.
She scooped up the head by its dark hair and grabbed the severed hand, stuffing them into the sack. With only a glance at Dorian, whose face had gone pale, she turned on her heel and left. Dorian Havilliard stood in silence as the servants rearranged the chamber, dragging the giant oak table and ornate chairs into the center of the room. They had a council meeting in 3 minutes. He hardly heard as Kaol took his leave, saying he'd like to debrief Selena further. His father grunted his approval. Selena had killed a man and his wife, and his father had ordered it. Dorian had barely been able to look at either of them. He thought he'd been able to convince his father to reevaluate his brutal policies after the massacre of those rebels in Eelwe before Yulmas, but it seemed like it hadn't made any difference. And Selena. As soon as the servants finished arranging the table, Dorian slid into his usual seat at his father's right. The councilmen began trickling in, along with Duke Parrington, who went straight to the king and began murmuring to him, too soft for Dorian to hear. Dorian didn't bother saying anything to anyone, and just stared at the glass pitcher of water before him. Selena hadn't seemed like herself just now. Actually, for the 2 months since she'd been named the king's champion, she'd been like this. Her lovely dresses and ornate clothes were gone, replaced by an unforgiving, close-cut black tunic and pants, her hair pulled back in a long braid that fell into the folds of that dark cloak she was always wearing. She was a beautiful wraith, and when she looked at him, it was like she didn't even know who he was. Dorian glanced at the open doorway, through which she had vanished moments before. If she could kill people like this, then manipulating him into believing she felt something for him would have been all too easy. Making an ally of him, making him love her enough to face his father on her behalf, to ensure that she was appointed champion. Dorian couldn't bring himself to finish the thought. He'd visit her. Tomorrow, perhaps. Just to see if there was a chance he was wrong. But he couldn't help wondering if he'd ever meant anything to Selena at all. Selena strode quickly and quietly down hallways and stairwells, taking the now familiar route to the castle sewer. It was the same waterway that flowed past her secret tunnel, though here it smelled far worse, thanks to the servants depositing refuse almost hourly. Her steps, then a second pair, Kaol's, echoed in the long subterranean passage. But she didn't say anything until she stopped at the edge of the water, glancing at the several archways that opened on either side of the river. No one was here. So, she said without looking behind her, are you going to say hello, or are you just going to follow me everywhere?
She turned to face him,
the sack still dangling from her hand.
Are you still acting like the king's champion, or are you back to being Selena?
In the torchlight, his bronze eyes glittered. Of course Kaol would notice the difference. He noticed everything. She couldn't tell whether it pleased her or not, especially when there was a slight bite to his words. When she didn't reply, he asked,
How was Belhaven?
The same as it always is. She knew precisely what he meant. He wanted to know how her mission had gone.
He fought you?
He jerked his chin toward the sack in her hand. She shrugged and turned back to the dark river. It was nothing I couldn't handle. She tossed the sack into the sewer. They watched in silence as it bobbed, then slowly sank.
Kaol cleared his throat. She knew he hated this.
When she'd gone on her first mission, to an estate up the coast in Mia, he'd paced so much before she left that she honestly thought he would ask her not to go. And when she'd returned, severed head and toe and rumors flying about Sir Carlin's murder, it had taken a week for him to even look her in the eye.
But what had he expected? When will you begin your new mission?
He asked. Tomorrow, or the day after. I need to rest, she added quickly when he frowned. And besides, it'll only take me a day or two to figure out how guarded Archer is and sort out my approach. Hopefully I won't even need the month the king gave me. And hopefully Archer would have some answers about how he'd gotten on the king's list, and what plans exactly that the king had alluded to. Then she would figure out what to do with him. Kaol stepped beside her, still staring at the filthy water, where the sack was undoubtedly now caught in the current and drifting out into the Avery River and the sea beyond.
I'd like to debrief you. She raised an eyebrow.
Aren't you at least going to take me to dinner first?
His eyes narrowed, and she gave him a pout. It's not a joke. I want the details of what happened with Nerol.
She brushed him aside with a grin, wiping her gloves on her pants before heading back up the stairs.
Kaol grabbed her arm. If Nerol fought back, then there might be witnesses who heard,
He didn't make any noise, Selena snapped, shaking him off as she stormed up the steps.
After 2 weeks of travel, she just wanted to sleep. Even the walk up to her rooms felt like a trek.
You don't need to debrief me, Kaol. He stopped her again at a shadowy landing, with a firm hand on her shoulder.
When you go away, he said, the distant torchlight illuminating the rugged plains of his face, I have no idea what's happening to you. I don't know if you're hurt or rotting in a gutter somewhere. Yesterday I heard a rumor that they caught the killer responsible for Nerol's death.
He brought his face close to hers, his voice hoarse.
Until you arrived today, I thought they meant you. I was about to go down there myself to find you.
Well, that would explain why she'd seen Kaol's horse being saddled at the stables when she arrived. She loosed a breath, her face suddenly warm. Have a little more faith in me than that. I am the king's champion, after all.
She didn't have time to brace herself as he pulled her against him, his arms wrapping tightly around her.
She didn't hesitate before twining her arms over his shoulders, breathing in the scent of him. He hadn't held her since the day she'd learned she had officially won the competition, though the memory of that embrace often drifted into her thoughts. And as she held him now, the craving for it never to stop roared through her. His nose grazed the nape of her neck.
"Gods above, you smell horrible," he muttered.
She hissed and shoved him, her face burning in earnest now. Carrying around dead body parts for weeks isn't exactly conducive to smelling nice. And maybe if I'd been given time for a bath instead of being ordered to report immediately to the king, I might have—
She stopped herself at the sight of his grin and smacked his shoulder.
Idiot. Selena linked arms with him, tugging him up the stairs. Come on. Let's go to my room so you can debrief me like a proper gentleman. Kaol snorted and nudged her with his elbow, but didn't let go.
After a joyous Fleetfoot calmed down enough for Selena to speak without being licked, Kaol squeezed every last detail from her and left her with the promise to return for dinner in a few hours. And after she let Philippa fuss over her in the bath and bemoan the state of her hair and nails, Selena collapsed onto her bed.
Fleetfoot leapt up beside her, curling in close to her side. Stroking the dog's silky golden coat, Selena stared at the ceiling, the exhaustion seeping out of her sore muscles. The king had believed her. and Kaol hadn't once doubted her story as he inquired about her mission. She couldn't quite decide if that made her feel smug, disappointed, or outright guilty. But the lies had rolled off her tongue. Nerral awoke right before she killed him. She had to slit his wife's throat to keep her from screaming, and the fight was a tad messier than she would have liked. She'd thrown in real details, too. The second-floor hall window, the storm, the servant with the candle. The best lies were always mixed with truth. Selena clutched the amulet on her chest. The Eye of Elena. She hadn't seen Elena since their last encounter in the tomb. Hopefully, now that she was the king's champion, the ancient queen's ghost would leave her alone. Still, in the months since Elena had given her the amulet for protection, Selena had come to find its presence reassuring. The metal was always warm, as though it had a life of its own. She squeezed it hard. If the king knew the truth about what she did, what she'd been doing these past 2 months. She had embarked on the first mission intending to quickly dispatch the target. She'd prepared herself for the kill, told herself that Sir Carlin was nothing but a stranger and his life meant nothing to her. But when she got to his estate and witnessed the unusual kindness with which he treated his servants, when she saw him playing the lyre with a traveling minstrel he sheltered in his hall, when she realized whose agenda she was aiding, she couldn't do it. She tried to bully and coax and bribe herself into doing it, but she couldn't. Still, she had to produce a murder scene, and a body. She'd given Lord Nerral the same choice she'd given Sir Carlin. Die right then, or fake his own death and flee, flee far, and never use his given name again. So far, of the four men she'd been assigned to dispatch, all had chosen escape. It wasn't hard to get them to part with their seal rings or other token items, and it was even easier to get them to hand over their nightclothes so she could stash them in accordance with the wounds she would claim to have given them. Bodies were easy to acquire, too. Sick houses were always dumping fresh corpses. It was never hard to find one that looked enough like her target, especially since the locations of the kills had been distant enough to give the flesh time to rot. She didn't know who the head of Lord Nerral actually belonged to, only that he had similar hair, and when she inflicted a few slashes on his face and let the whole thing decompose a bit, it did the job. The hand had also come from that corpse, and the lady's hand, that had come from a young woman barely into her first bleeding, struck dead by a sickness that 10 years ago a gifted healer could easily have cured. But with magic gone, and those wise healers hanged or burned, people were dying in droves, dying from stupid, once-curable illnesses. She rolled over to bury her face in Fleetfoot's soft coat. Archer. How was she going to fake his death? He was so popular and so recognizable. She still couldn't imagine him having a connection to whatever this underground movement was. But if he was on the king's list, then perhaps in the years since she'd seen him, Archer had used his talents to become powerful. Yet what information could the movement possibly have on the king's plans that would make it a true threat? The king had enslaved the entire continent. What more could he do? There were other continents, of course. Other continents with wealthy kingdoms, like Wendlin, that faraway land across the sea. It had held out against his naval attack so far, but she'd heard next to nothing about that war since before she'd gone to Endovir. And why would a rebel movement care about kingdoms on another continent when they had their own to worry about? So the plans had to be about this land, this continent. She didn't want to know. She didn't want to know what the king was doing, what he imagined for the Empire. She'd use this month to figure out what to do with Archer, and pretend she'd never heard that horrible word. Plans. Selena fought a shudder. She was playing a very, very lethal game. And now that her targets were people in Rifthold, now that it was Archer, she'd have to find a way to play it better. Because if the king ever learned the truth, if he found out what she was doing, he'd destroy her. Chapter 3 Selena sprinted through the darkness of the secret passageway, her breathing ragged. She glanced over her shoulder to find Kane grinning at her, his eyes like burning coals. No matter how fast she ran, his stalking gait easily kept him just behind her. After him flowed a wake of glowing green word marks, their strange shapes and symbols illuminating the ancient blocks of stone.
and behind Cain, its long nail scraping against the ground, lumbered the Ritterak.
Selena stumbled, but remained upright. Each step felt like she was wading through mud. She couldn't escape him. He would catch her eventually. And once the Ritterak got hold of her, she didn't dare glance again at those two big teeth that jutted out of its mouth, or those fathomless eyes, gleaming with the desire to devour her bit by bit. Cain chuckled, the sound grating on the stone walls. He was close now, close enough that his fingers raked against the nape of her neck. He whispered her name, her true name, and she screamed as he... Selena awoke with a gasp, clutching the eye of Elena. She scanned the room for denser shadows, for glowing word marks, for signs that the secret door was open behind the tapestry that concealed it. But there was only the crackling of the dying fire. Selena sank back into her pillows. It was just a nightmare. Cain and the Ritterak were gone, and Elena wouldn't bother her again. It was over. Fleetfoot, sleeping under the many layers of blankets, put her head on Selena's stomach. Selena nestled down farther, wrapping her arms around the dog, as she closed her eyes. It was over. In the chill mists of early morning, Selena hurled a stick across the wide field of the game park. Fleetfoot took off through the pale grass like a bolt of golden lightning, so fast that Selena let out a low, appreciative whistle. Beside her, Nehemia clicked her tongue, her eyes on the swift hound. With Nehemia so busy winning over Queen Georgina and gleaning information about the king's plans for Eelway, dawn was usually the only time they could see each other. Did the king know that the princess was one of the spies he'd mentioned? He couldn't, or else he'd never trust Selena to be his champion, not when their friendship was widely known. "Why Archer Finn?" Nehemia mused in Eelway, keeping her voice low. Selena had explained her latest mission, keeping the details brief. Fleetfoot reached the stick and trotted back to them, her long tail wagging. Even though she wasn't yet fully grown, the dog was already abnormally large. Dorian had never said what breed, exactly, he suspected her mother had mated with. Given Fleetfoot's size, it could have been a wolfhound. Or an actual wolf. Selena shrugged at Nehemia's question, stuffing her hands into the fur-lined pockets of her cloak. The king thinks... He thinks that Archer is a part of some secret movement against him. A movement here in Rifthold to get him off the throne. Surely no one would be that bold. The rebels hide out in the mountains and forests, and places where the local people can conceal and support them. Not here. Rifthold would be a death trap. Selena shrugged again, just as Fleetfoot returned and demanded the stick be thrown again. Apparently not. And apparently the king has a list of people whom he thinks are key players in this movement against him.
And you are to kill them all?
Nehemia's creamy brown face paled slightly.
One by one, Selena said, throwing the stick as far as she could into the misty field. Fleetfoot shot off, dried grass and the remnants of the last snowstorm crunching beneath her huge paws. He'll only reveal one name at a time. A bit dramatic, if you ask me, but apparently they're interfering with his plans.
What plans? Nehemia said sharply. Selena frowned.
I was hoping you might know.
I don't. There was a tense pause. If you learn anything, Nehemia began.
I'll see what I can do, Selena lied. She wasn't even sure if she truly wanted to know what the king was up to, let alone share that information with anyone else. It was selfish, and stupid, perhaps, but she couldn't forget the warning the king had given the day he crowned her champion. If she stepped out of line, if she betrayed him, he'd kill Kaol, and then Nehemia, and then the princess's family. And all of this, every death she faked, every lie she told, put them at risk. Nehemia shook her head, but didn't reply. Whenever the princess or Kaol or even Dorian looked at her like that, it was almost too much to bear. But they had to believe the lies, too, for their own safety. Nehemia began wringing her hands, and her eyes grew distant. Selena had seen that expression often in the past month.
If you're fretting for my sake,
I'm not, Nehemia said. You can take care of yourself.
Then what is it?
Selena's stomach clenched. If Nehemia talked more about the rebels, she didn't know how much of it she could take.
Yes, she wanted to be free of the king, both as his champion and as a child of a conquered nation. But she wanted nothing to do with whatever plots were brewing in Rifthold, and whatever desperate hope the rebels still savored. To stand against the king would be nothing but folly. They'd all be destroyed. But Nehemia said, "Numbers in the Calicola labor camp are swelling. Every day more and more Ilwe rebels arrive. Most consider it a miracle that they're alive. After the soldiers butchered those 500 rebels. My people are afraid." Fleetfoot again returned, and it was Nehemia who took the stick from the dog's mouth and chucked it into the gray dawn. But the conditions in Calicola. She paused, probably recalling the three scars that raked down Selena's back. A permanent reminder of the cruelty of the salt mines of Endovir, and a reminder that even though she was free, thousands of people still toiled and died there. Calicola, the sister camp to Endovir, was rumored to be even worse. "The king will not meet with me," Nehemia said, now toying with one of her fine, slender braids. "I have asked him 3 times to discuss the conditions in Calicola, and each time he claims to be occupied. Apparently he's too busy finding people for you to kill." Selena blushed at the harshness in Nehemia's tone. Fleetfoot returned again, but when Nehemia took the stick, the princess kept it in her hands. "I must do something, Alentia," Nehemia said, using the name she'd given her on the night Selena admitted that she was an assassin. "I must find a way to help my people. When does gathering information become a stalemate? When do we act?" Selena swallowed hard. That word, act, scared her more than she'd like to admit. Worse than the word plans. Fleetfoot sat at their feet, tail wagging as she waited for the stick to be thrown. But when Selena said nothing, when she promised nothing, just as she always did when Nehemia spoke about these things, the princess dropped the stick on the ground and quietly walked back to the castle. Selena waited until Nehemia's footsteps faded and let out a long breath. She was to meet Kaol for their morning run in a few minutes. But after that she was going into Rifthold. Let Archer wait until this afternoon. After all, the king had given her a month, and despite her own questions for Archer, she wanted to get off the castle grounds for a bit. She had blood money to burn. We hope you enjoyed this free preview of Crown of Midnight, Book 2 in the Throne of Glass series. To keep the story going, get the complete book today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.